Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode. Good morning. Thanks for listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5 with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Time for the first Friday Newscap of 2020. Our panelists today, communications consultant Julie Earthly of Earthly Uncuffed, and former State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So, as we were just discussing, this was a nice holiday week. So, not a lot of stuff to discuss as of the week that was. So, we're going to look a little bit ahead. Julie, let's start with redistricting, the possibility of that, because we heard this week, and we've been hearing talk about this, the census numbers. Is Arizona going to get a 10th congressional district? Right. First of all, how significant is that? How much do you think the parties are going to fight over? We have no idea how they're going to be drawn at this point. But is this a time that Arizona moving more purple, could we see a competitive seat? What are your thoughts on that generally?
Oh, boy. The Independent Redistricting Commission is going to be a huge fight. It actually already has. As we know, so there is a, you know, the appellate court, the Commission on Appellate Court Appointees is basically a commission that decides which candidates the parties can choose from for those all-important five commission members for the Independent Redistricting Commission. And Democrats are already quite upset over this because they believe that that commission has been stacked. The governor, in his last round of appointments, did not appoint a single Democrat. In contrast, Janet Napolitano had appointed seven Republicans to that commission. And so Democrats are already saying, listen, this is a commission that is supposed to represent the diversity of Arizona, and it does not. And so the fighting has already started. And I think what we can be assured of going into this process is that there's going to be a lot of time in litigation.
I mean, it's a third go-around for the IRC. First time around, Republicans seem to have the advantage. Last time around, and there's that fifth independent seat, which the person is ostensibly an independent, but as we've seen, person leans one way or the other. It's so huge in terms of deciding that. What do you make of how big the IRC, how big a story that will be for us as we move toward the end of 2020?
I agree. It's going to be a very significant story. And one of the things you're going to see this time around, I think in the last redistricting process, the Republicans really did drop the ball. I think they didn't. They left it up to the party apparatus to really drive it and develop the resources and the technical expertise. And they didn't really have any. And you could see the Democrats, I think, ran circles around the Republicans and the maps that were drawn. Ostensibly, they were still like District 9 was a Republican, quote unquote, district. But it really benefited, as we've seen, every Democrat has won pretty handily. So I think now you're going to see much more of an engagement from the outside in. I think there's going to be, you know, the party is going to be front and center, but you're going to see a lot more interest making sure that that process is going to be, you know, from a Republican standpoint, a little bit more competitive this time around.
Are there particular members of Arizona's delegation that either of you think should be concerned about having their districts redrawn or losing particular constituencies, especially if we get another seat?
Well, if you just look at the one I just mentioned, I think a Greg Stanton, for instance, is already looking at possible other opportunities. You know, his name keeps popping up for possibly a U.S. Senate if things work out, you know, and the Republicans win. And then McSally would have to run again in two more years. For the governor position, his name keeps being popped up. And I think one of the reasons is I think there's a doubt that that district is going to be as probably as safe as it is now for a Democrat. Again, if it turns out the Republicans are able to manage it better than they did last time. Tom O'Halloran in District 1, that has always been, you know, by and large, a Republican
and
area.
And a huge district.
And a huge district. But the Democrats were able to draw that in a way that they were able to capture a lot of areas that helped out O'Halloran. So I think just off the top of my head, those are the two. But again, now if the Democrats are able to control the process and do a better job, just like they did last time, you might see them be more competitive in areas that you may not think, like a Schweikert district, for instance.
Correct.
Julie, what do you think?
No, I agree. I think it's all going to come down to who is able to, like Jaime said, have that control in ultimately drawing the maps and figuring out what it means to be competitive. And, of course, each party has a different idea of what it means to be competitive. So will these districts essentially be competitive in the voters' minds, meaning will there be an opportunity for either a Republican or a Democrat to win a district? I'm not so sure. And I think that is the biggest concern by Democrats, of course, because they want these competitive districts because, as we saw in the last go-round, they were able to capture those districts when they were much more competitive.
I mean, without going too far in the weeds, when you say, because those of us in this room have talked about how Republicans dropped the ball or Democrats took advantage the last time around, what does it mean that the Republicans dropped the ball? How much influence can actually be had there? Because I thought this was supposed to be independent. I'm confused.
See, that's the thing what I love about all of these so-called initiatives that are supposed to get interests out of elections. You know, politics is, it's a fight. And so you're seeing this independent redistricting commission, not really independent. And so one of the things that happens, what the Democrats did is when they looked at the maps, they looked at the strength of people actually going out to vote. So they might have said, okay, well, Republicans, here you go. You can have more Republicans in that district. Everybody thinks, well, it's going to lean Republican because they have more. But they really had more Democrats that were more enthusiastic voters than the Republicans were. So things like that, where it takes a lot of data, it takes a lot of mining of information that really drives this process, and you have to have people that really know what they're doing. Again, the last time Democrats did a great job of figuring that out, getting people, national folks to come in and help with that kind of information, and I think the Republicans kind of dropped the ball. But this time around, you're just not going to see that happen because of what occurred last time.
Is it safe to say that no matter what happens, I mean, Julie, you alluded to this, mm-hmm. we've seen the first two go-rounds end up in court for years in both
right.
cases. I mean, is this going to be the, you know, Attorney Full Employment Act again when the next legislative and congressional maps are drawn?
I think without a doubt. If there's anybody that stands to benefit from this, it's a handful of attorneys who are going to do great in the next few years. And as Jaime said, you know, And as I alluded to earlier, the fight has already started. It started with the Commission on Appellate Court appointees, and there's going to be some more appointments coming up. It's going to be a huge fight, and I think this is going to be the topic of many stories over the next year and more.
We're just a little over a week away from the Governor's State of the State address, next legislative session. It's an election year. Julie, hopes of bipartisanship on anything? We saw a little bit as it related to the drought contingency plan. That was sort of had to happen that way.
Right.
Education funding on certain aspects of it a little bit. But what do you think about coming up, especially heading into an election year?
I think it's wishful thinking. I do think that there is an opportunity, particularly actually when it comes to criminal justice reform. I think there's an opportunity there. Unfortunately, though, the sort of all-powerful committee chairs who need to see that legislation through, Representative John Allen, Senator Eddie Farnsworth, they are not really open to criminal justice reform. And so if there is any hope of bipartisanship on that issue, the governor will have to take an active role. And I just haven't seen a willingness from the Ninth Floor to take that on. So I think the reality is that there are a number of opportunities for bipartisanship. It's unlikely. Even when it comes to criminal justice reform, I think their biggest hope of any kind of real reform is going to come through an initiative, to be totally honest. I just don't see it happening at the legislature.
Now, I mean, Julie did not mention education funding or anything related to that. What do you make of that?
Well, it's interesting. The steam that was in that pot, right? Remember that we saw the last couple of years with the Red for Ed movement really has dissipated to some extent. And I think a lot of it was because you have constant, and the governor's done a good job about this. I mean, he's constantly talked about the increases in funding, and he's made that a staple of everything. You know, he's talked about it consistently. And he's also, every time you do social media, he always talks about, you know, how much teachers are getting raises, and they've made that front and center. And so this 20 by 20, the 20% increases by 20 this next fiscal year, I think you're going to see an addition to that because they are in a better position. Being an election year, I think they can then tout, well, see, we actually did 25 by 20. So the polling data that I've seen shows that people still want to see more funding into schools. They still want to see teachers get increases. But whether or not they want to raise taxes to do it, because I think they're seen from this echo chamber, no, it's being taken care of, so we really don't have to. So I think that's, and then the other reason, just purely political. I think the left, and particularly the Education Association, the Arizona Education Association, sees the opportunity of, well, why do we want to give them an out by doing an initiative that takes the pressure off, where we could use that as a campaign issue? Because if you think about it, this can become a very powerful tool that the Democrats can use if they figure out that this is not being taken care of, quote unquote. Mm. And so I think this is something that's not going to be done as far as an initiative goes or a referendum this time around.
I think there's still the possibility of an education initiative. It's becoming less likely as time goes on. It's still possible. One thing that people aren't talking about that could come into play during this legislative session is, you know, there is a lawsuit out there for funding, you know, about $2 billion in cuts to capital funding for schools, for building maintenance and repair, for soft capital such as textbooks and technology. There is a massive lawsuit out there that is in the process right now, and that's been going on for several years. I don't know when this lawsuit is going to come to a head, but many people anticipate it could be in a short amount of time. If this happens during legislative session, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that schools will likely be owed. And so this surplus that we keep talking about could be gone in an instant if that's the case. The state has been down this road before. They lost. I anticipate they will lose again. And at some point, these schools are going to have to be made whole. So I think this could still be a huge issue when it comes to 2020. And whether that's at the legislature, whether that's in races for the state legislature or an initiative, I don't see the issue of education going away anytime soon.
I mean, Julie mentioned sort of a dirty S word at the Capitol, surplus. Nobody wants to use that word, it seems. The conventional wisdom is often that it is easier to do a budget when there's no money because
Correct.
You just say no to everybody as That's opposed right. to having to pick winners and losers to some extent. In an election year, people want to be done soon because they have to get out and campaign for their seats or for other offices. Do you see the fiscal situation maybe keeping lawmakers in session a little bit longer this year?
I do. I think that's always the case. I mean, it's, like you said, it's easier to cut and than it is to figure out, okay, who's going to be the winners and losers. This time around, I think the winners, if there is going to be winners, is going to be education funding. I think they're going to see an increase, but also infrastructure, because infrastructure is the easiest thing you can do as one-time dollars. So I think you're going to see quite a bit of resources go into the highway users fund, the HERF fund, because that can be spread out across the state. It can be used to, you know, grease the votes, if, so to speak. I know you know that you're shocked. You know that happens. But when legislators can go back to their districts and say, yeah, we're going to have money for get these roads fixed. And in rural Arizona, that's a massive issue, and it's starting to become a bigger and bigger issue. But even in Pima County, you know, you can go to Republicans in even in the northern side. That's the one issue that they'll say that they want to have happen is infrastructure funding. So those are the kinds of things that can get done that might help with the budget process.
Yeah, and I think corrections as well. That's one area that we can't ignore. We saw recently with the broken locks, you know, and the legislature being willing, saying, listen, we need safety, not just for our inmates, but for our corrections officers. And these corrections officers are leaving in much in the same way that our teachers are leaving. They have very low pay. We need to get qualified corrections officers into our prisons. And so I think that that's going to be an area that's going to be pulling on those surplus dollars as well. And I think perhaps if there's any bipartisanship, that would be the one area where you would see bipartisanship, is that, yes, we need to fix some of these problems in our prisons.
So before the break, I'm not going to ask you guys to peg a certain legislative district or anything like that. But do you see changes in certain districts, either predicted or unpredicted or surprise or not surprise, that will either strengthen the Republican majority a little bit or where Democrats can gain? I mean, do you see Democrats gaining a seat or two? Do you see Republicans gaining a seat or two in either body?
Yes. The short answer is yes. I do think Democrats have a very strong opportunity to pick up a couple seats in the House.
In areas they've been gaining ground, Julie, or what sort of area?
Yes. So I think in areas where they've been gaining ground, also I think, for instance, in LD21, I think there's an opportunity there with Kathy Connect running as a Democrat, as a single-shot candidate against two Republican. They are both Republican Republican incumbents, but I still think that there's an opportunity. She has a really
strong— Had she run as an independent before?
Correct. Yes. Okay. She ran as an independent, and she ran for the Senate. Now she's running for the House. So I think there's an opportunity there as well. And I think, you know, one of the big matchups besides LD6, I think there's obviously an opportunity in LD6 as well, particularly on the House side. But on the Senate side, you have this matchup again between Kate Brophy McGee and Christine Marsh, former Arizona Teacher of the Year. That was decided by just a couple hundred votes. There's going to be another huge matchup there again.
Okay. And I mean, we don't have Kyrsten Sinema running this time around, which may have helped Democrats.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And a lot of this is, let's face it, I mean, it's driven from the top down, right? How the presidential politics is playing nationally, how the U.S. Senate race is going. That tends to affect all
you
the down-ticker
our next
races.
Segment. Thank you.
But the one thing that I think is hurting is helping the Republicans right now are the Democrats. Because right now there's somewhat of a civil war going on within the Democratic base where you have the leadership of the Democratic Party that's hoping to become Speaker, Charlene Fernandez. They're actually going and trying to recruit candidates in primaries against incumbent Democrats. So if you think about all those resources that could be going to these races like 21, where it should be going if you think about it, they're trying to purge of the what they consider to be the more not really Democrats. You know, as Republicans call the rhinos, I don't know what the term is for the Democrats, but they don't think they're Democrat enough. And so that's, to me, it's nonsensical on its face, but it's something that I assure you will help the Republicans if that continues. And it's starting to become a very big fight internally.
Julie, can you give us 20 seconds on that?
I don't think there's a lot of party resources going to those sort of inner party fights. And so I think you're going to see primaries in Democratic-controlled districts, but the focus is still going to be in those competitive districts.
Okay. That's Julie Earthly. Also here is Jaime Molero with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guest today, our former state superintendent of public instruction, Jaime Molero of Molero Alvarez, and communications consultant, Julie Earthly of Earthly Uncuffed.
So we are about a couple months away now from the presidential preference election. The Republicans have decided not to have one this year. Donald Trump will be the nominee here. Julie, how is it looking on the Democratic side? We just saw one candidate drop out this week, Julian Castro of Texas. How is the race shaping up at this point in Arizona?
You know, it's interesting because I actually thought that Joe Biden's strength would not remain as high as it has over the course of the last few months, but he's maintaining. And I think right now what's happening is most Democrats just see him as the safest choice. However, if something, I think this is highly unlikely, but if something were to happen to Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders and one of them dropped out of the race, I think it would actually become much more competitive because you would see the progressives line up behind one of those candidates.
Whichever one's left.
Correct. Exactly. But I think by and large, you know, Vice President Biden just has that momentum. And I think here in Arizona, that plays actually quite well because he's considered more moderate. He's sort of, you know, back to the Obama era, which they're comfortable with. So I think it's more about comfort right now and this idea of who can beat Donald Trump. And right now, he is still seen as the individual most likely to beat Donald Trump.
I mean, has the issue of electability changed since Donald Trump, who a lot of people thought was not electable, he won? Has the notion of electability changed?
Yes, I think that absolutely has. And I think in a lot of ways to the detriment of the Democrats this time around, because if you think about it, look at the numbers that Buttigieg and Sanders in particular, their last quarter fundraising just eclipsed what Biden was able to do. And I think a lot of it is because a lot of Democrats are thinking to themselves, well, if Donald Trump can win the primary, why couldn't a Bernie Sanders do it? And I think if you play that out from a Republican standpoint, that is the best scenario that you can have happen, is if they do decide to go with an Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or somebody that's seen as so progressive on the left that it just polling numbers show that that's where the Republicans and, of course, Donald Trump becomes a lot stronger. So that's where a lot of the dynamics, because of the Trump factor, as I call it, has turned politics on its head. Whereas Biden, I would say, yeah, you know, some states like Arizona might have momentum, but in a lot of other states where it's going to be key battlegrounds, boy, he's stumbling.
So the conventional wisdom has been, over the last few months, that if Joe Biden, let's say, were the nominee ultimately, whether or not he wins the Arizona presidential preference election, but if Biden is the nominee, that might put a state like Arizona in play come November. Do you think the conventional wisdom?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, that's always the wisdom. But there's so many factors. Right now, we're barely starting the first inning of a long game. And there's so many things like, you know, the economy. If the economy continues to increase and move in a positive clip, of course, that helps the incumbent. This impeachment inquiry, it's interesting how that's kind of fallen off the radar, but it's still out there. And as that continues to play on, it seems as though, again, polling data shows it tends to help President Trump and the Republicans. So there's a lot of factors going on, so I think it's still too early to tell. However, if the Democrats continue to move towards a very hard progressive positions, I think that ultimately not just helps the president, it helps all the down ticket.
Julie, how challenging is this for Democrats generally? Because there are people who are not necessarily party activists who will say, well, you should make the practical choice.
Right.
But more activists will say, well, wait a second, why are we going to try to sort of go back to what it was? We need to be something a little bit different. And then others will say, well, if you want that, why would you nominate a nearly 70-year-old senator from Massachusetts or someone who's right. not even technically a Democrat in Bernie Sanders?
You know, the reality is these kinds of sort of inner party squabbles happen all the time. And you see it on both sides. It's more likely to happen when you have a whole host of candidates, right? When you have somebody who's running against an incumbent president. So I don't think it's really all that unusual. And I think, again, it'll play out. It may be that Biden ends up winning because of this, because we have Warren and Senator Sanders splitting this progressive vote. However, at the end of the day, I think Democrats are going to rally around whoever the nominee is. And I think, you know, by and large, what they want is they just want Donald Trump defeated. That is, you know, that's the number one issue. And I think to go back just a little bit to these issues that could crop up that could be huge, we may be in a war or a conflict with Iran. And if that happens, boy, does that change the game.
Let me throw in one more naive question related to money, and I want to have you both talk about this. Mark mentioned that Julian Castro had dropped out, someone who actually seemed to be popular here in Arizona, mm-hmm. former cabinet secretary and person of Latino descent, mm-hmm. and one would think that would be appealing to Democrats. Is the system just so controlled, even more than we thought, by just money, because he never had a chance to gain it? He's not going to be in any caucuses, any primaries. He's already out. Kamala Harris, another person. Mm-hmm. I mean, to say the system is a little flawed might be understating it. But, I mean, he seemed like someone who would be appealing for Democrats, and he's not even in.
But if you think about it, you know, where was Mayor Buttigieg 9 months ago? You know, people think, well, he's a good guy, we like him, but nah, not really a serious candidate. But now he's come to be one of the front runners in the Democratic mm-hmm. primary. So, yes, money plays a big difference. I think when you're a Yang or a Bloomberg or even a Tom Steyer, you're seeing them all over the place because they have the resources to – but they still haven't been able to break out even with that money. So it's a combination of message, the person that's delivering that message, and being able to resonate with the voters that they're trying to get at. Donald Trump was a perfect example. Now, he had the resources because he had his own wealth. But that message was something that even all these other candidates, just as well-funded, couldn't break through. So the messaging is just as important as the money behind it.
Obviously, messaging is key. And, you know, as a communications consultant, that's usually the number one thing that I talk about. You have to understand the message. I think on the Democratic side, however, there are a number of folks like myself who are personally a little disappointed with where things are going. I find it hard to believe that a female candidate who perhaps is a mayor of a town of 100,000 people would ever be considered to be a presidential contender. I don't think, one, she would ever consider running, or two, that she would be given the kind of media attention that Mayor Buttigieg has received. So I think that there is still, unfortunately, a long way for women to go, and in particular, women of color. And that may have more to do with the fact that we've seen people like Kamala Harris, supremely qualified, not being able to raise those funds. There's still this underlying reality that it's just harder for certain candidates to break through.
I remember when people used to say that about Republicans.
Julie, are there particular issues? You mentioned a number, the two of you mentioned a number of things that ultimately could affect the presidential race come November. Are there particular issues that you think will be on voters' minds in March when they are deciding which Democrat they would like to be their nominee?
Definitely.
Other than, I guess, who can beat Donald Trump?
Right. Well, who can beat Donald Trump, again, I think will be first and foremost in their minds. But at the end of the day, it's family security. That's what's so important. That's what you're going to see play out in Arizona elections. That's what you're going to see play out in national elections. You know, we hear so often from businesses that they need this security. They need to know from year to year where their taxes are going to be and what they can expect. Families need that too. They need to know that if their daughter has a brain tumor, that they're not going to go bankrupt trying to help her. They need to know that if they send their child down the street to the school, that they're going to have a qualified teacher in front of their classrooms. So those kitchen table concepts, healthcare, dreamers, the economy, those definitely will play a role in their minds.
We need to wrap on a quickie on that as far as the issues.
No, and that's true. But I think, again, the economy is so important in any presidential election year. And as we're seeing, the economy continues to grow at a very healthy clip. People are feeling like, looking at the trends in the polling data, folks are saying they may not like, quote-unquote, the president and, you know, his diatribes, but they see things improving. They see things getting more comfortable for them and their families. Savings are going up. Debt is starting to go down. I mean, those are the things that make a big difference in a presidential election year, and right now that benefits Republicans.
Okay. Jaime Melero of Melero Alvarez, Julie Earthly of Earthly Uncuffed. Guys, thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much.
Happy New Year.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.